This is Wins and Losses with Clay Travis. Clay talks with the most entertaining people in sports, entertainment, and business. Now, here's Clay Travis.
Welcome into a special Wins and Losses podcast. Maybe even want to call it a quarantine edition, because one of the things people have been doing in massive numbers as they have been quarantined around the country is watch a lot of streaming shows. And right now, as I'm speaking, the number one show in all of Netflix, which is sweeping across the nation, is a show called Tiger King. The title is Tiger King. It is an unbelievable show. And there are so many different directions to go with it. But we bring in now the best possible person, I think, to break down this show with me, Mississippi State head football coach Mike Leach. Coach, has it gotten used? Have you gotten used to being called Mississippi State head football coach yet?
Yeah, I've come close to misfiring once or twice, which that happens. And, you know, once in a while, you know, Texas Tech can find its way towards the surface, too. But it's exciting to be a part of the Mississippi State, and we're just looking forward to getting started, but trying to make the most of this time, here that we have off, whether it's, read more, attach to family more, learn something, exercise a little, eat healthy. I'm on an eat healthy kick. Watch interesting shows, and one show that is not a waste of time at all. I mean, there may be some parents out there that may think it is, but Tiger King is well worth your time, because everybody, I think, wonders what exactly the boundaries, the dimension of the human experience is, and this one definitely explores that.
Amen. That's so well said. And so let's start here. For people out there, I'm assuming almost everybody has watched it. So obviously there are lots of spoilers here. So we're talking for an audience. If you haven't watched The Tiger King yet and you've downloaded this podcast, you probably should stop right now, go watch it, and then come back and listen. So I'm not going to say spoiler alert. We're just going to talk as if you have watched, if you're listening right now, all of the different episodes. So let's start here. Did you find Joe Exotic to be a likable guy? I mean, this is essentially the story of Joe Exotic, a guy who starts runs a wildlife park in Wynnewood. I didn't know how they pronounced it exactly, but Wynnewood Exotic Animal Park. And we start off following him, and obviously we see his ups and downs, and it ends with him in prison. But did you find him to be a likable person?
Likable would be quite strong.
Yeah.
Charismatic, yes. Likable, no. I think a guy that his intelligence and innovation was constantly underestimated. I think that it is not a show of likable people. There is not a bunch of likable people on here. I like the Tigers the best. And then second best, the young lady that got her arm cut off seemed to be the one quiet but solo voice of common sense.
Yeah, you know that it's a crazy show when the girl who got her arm torn off and went back to work like 5 days later seems like the most realistic of all of them. So I'll say this. If you had to work at one of these animal parks, if you had to work for Joe Exotic, Doc Antle, or you had to work for Carol Baskin, which of these are the three people who run the animal parks? And what's ironic, of course, as you watch, is there isn't a whole heck of a lot of difference between them, although Carol Baskin tries to make it out like her situation is so much different than these guys. In the grand scheme of things, she has a lot more in common with them than she does not in common. Which of the three do you think you would prefer to work with?
I think Joe Exotic would be the most exciting.
Yeah.
I think the most stable would be the fella Attell or whatever his name is in South Carolina.
Yep.
I think that, Carol Baskin, we're still trying to sort out whether or not she murdered her husband, and there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that she did. But that thing on its face is a fraud because not only are they in the tiger shilling business, but they're not in rescuing. They're in a they're in a profit motivated show the tigers just get them for free business, and so it's that whole thing in my mind is kind of based on a lie, a number of lies. They have, it seems to me, they had the worst pens of the three. So once the Tigers get there, I don't even know that they're quite as well taken care of as far as space and resource. But and that's hard to compare based on the show. But, the one thing that was notable at the beginning, there's this big, heavy guy, a unique-looking guy, big, heavy guy that says, in the exotic animal industry, you meet all kinds of people, and these people are different. He says, the monkey people are a little different. He says, but the big cat people will stab you in the back in a second. And they did. I mean, it's a constant 7-hour series of people stabbing each other in the back. Pretty narcissistic group to the point where there's not really room for anyone else. And the one thing that was unique about it is whether you go Joe or Mr. Attell or Carol Baskin, they all just thrived and craved attention, no matter hardly what form they got it in. And then the other guy that I would like to know a little more about, how about the reporter guy, the Hunter Thompson looking guy with the hat?
Oh yeah,
that he knows where
the producer.
All the bodies are buried.
Yeah,
but his material got destroyed. Kind of a guy in the shadows. That it was a show that. It's very Quentin Tarantino real life. So think Quentin Tarantino, real life. Things so extreme and so over the top, if you were to make a real movie out of it, like a commercial movie, you would have to take the edge off of a few items and a few coincidental things and a few things that happened in order to make it realistic enough that the audience doesn't laugh you out of the cinema. But the thing is, right before your eyes, all this stuff really happened.
So you're mentioning, there's several different things I want to kind of dive into. So I want to start with this question. You have worked in some eccentric places, right? You worked at Texas Tech, you worked at Washington State, now you're at Mississippi State as a head coach. Have you ever known a booster or somebody who was a big supporter of one of your athletic teams that had a tiger or had a lion or had a setup like this? There's a lot of rich people that decide, seems like drug dealers are always deciding to go get animals like this. Pablo Escobar had his own menagerie, down in Colombia. Have you ever known anybody who was...
Felix in Mexico did, because I watched Narcos also. Felix in Mexico did.
That's right.
And how about that? And these guys, awful lot of drug guys in this thing too. A lot of drugs. And
yes.
I don't know what it is about tigers and drugs, but
Have you ever known a booster who had like a big collection of animals like this? You ever go to somebody's house and think, my God, I can't believe, this guy lives in a place like this?
No, I have not. One time, and I don't know Ted Nugent, but twice there's been a little bit of talk of going hunting on Ted Nugent's ranch, which I've never done. But, his is a big ranch, and mainly the kind of the game animals, the hoofed game animals, is kind of some of the business he does. And then, no, I can't say that I have, so the people I know, I might add the most exotic pet of all of them. I had a raccoon when I was a kid. But, here's one for you. And sadly, the monkey died pretty much of old age, I believe. My friend Pat Knight, Bobby Knight's son, who was the basketball coach at Tech when I was there, remains a good friend, bought a place in Panama City, bought a house, and in between these two houses was a dock. And on the dock was a world-class tiki bar, just that the neighbors used, okay? And they would just go out there and watch the world go by and hang out at the tiki bar. And there are all these regulars that had been going there for years, which Pat kind of connected to. And then, of course, they had, you know, free permission to come and go from the monkey bar. And they helped out looking after his house in between times. And they had this monkey there, this kind of orangutan type of monkey. And the monkey just lived there in the monkey bar and let him out of his cage and have drinks. And, you know, there was the monkey. And the monkey lived in the monkey bar for years, years before Pat even got there. And so you could say that he sort of had a monkey for a while, although that monkey was well on his way to being taken care of and had a lot of well-wishing handlers around him.
Did you visit and hang out at the Tiki Bar at some point, or did you just hear about it?
I've always wanted to, and I'll start thinking about it, getting excited about it, have him send pictures of the monkey bar. The hurricane got the monkey bar. Then they rebuilt the monkey bar. It is kind of a bucket list item to go hang out with Pat Knight at the monkey bar. And Pat's in Vegas now, but I don't think he gets to the monkey bar as much as he'd like, but I would definitely like to check that out. The monkey's gone, though.
Yeah, well, in Panama City Beach, that's not far. I mean, you have to shoot me a text. I'll go, too, because that's close to where I'm down on the beach a lot down there as well. All right, so here's my first question, because I was talking to my wife. We were watching this together, and they're like, you know, Carol Baskin's talking about how awful Doc Antle's place is and also Joe Exotic's. And I'm assuming Doc Antle's place is still open. I kind of want to go. I want to go visit this place because having watched it, you know, Joe Exotic's place is clearly shut down. And I didn't really like Carol Baskin. I wouldn't want to give her any money. But I kind of would want to go to the Doc Antle place. Would you be, if you were in South Carolina and you were close by, would that be something that you were interested in doing, going to visit the Tiger Park?
I probably would. I mean, and now there may be lines out the door with the
success of this show. Oh, no doubt. It's the best advertising he could get. Yeah.
They said at the end, you know, the caption at the end that it may or may not still be in operation, but and his looked to be kind of the
highest,
cleanest, and the best, the best organized, you know. And he did seem to be, well, okay, now he's got some wild proclivities too. I lost track of how many wives, but and he puts them all to work. You know, if you go to work, you do a good job, you get to be one of his wives. And then, but it kind of looked like he was sort of organized, knew what he was doing. Where Joe Exotic, you know, he got into a lot of things, you know, ran for all kinds of public office. And then, of course, I'll tell you the best scene in the movie, the best scene in the whole movie is where, you know, he catches on or gets some information about Carol Baskin allegedly or possibly murdering her husband. And then he does the song, fancies himself as a country western singer.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yes.
Does Here Kitty Kitty, and it's a video. It's a video where he portrays her feeding her husband to her tigers.
Yes. It's an incredible music video. I mean, his music in general, I think, might become incredibly popular now. Because the videos themselves, I mean, you can't even make up the ideas of stuff that he came up with in so many different respects. I mean, Mike, the eulogy that he gave for one of his two husbands, Travis, who tragically shot himself, I was like, this is the most unbelievable. And then he started singing. I was like, this is the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen. And I was watching, and there are probably a lot of young single women who have watched this too, and they're probably thinking to themselves, wait a minute, Joe Exotic convinced two straight men three straight men, at least two straight men, to marry him. And there's a lot of single women out there. Like, I can't even get a man. And somehow Joe Exotic got a couple of men. I mean, I don't even understand how that happened.
Well, it sounded like drugs was a big part of
it. Well,
there
could that could be a big part of it.
So prison and drugs, you know, it's like you need somebody that needs you more than you need them. So he'd get these guys that got out of prison and then you know, load up and fuel their drug habit, and then the mixture of firearms with it. He had it all together. He had it all combined: alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and drugs, and then and sex. All the vices. Culminate all together, and he's a one-stop guy. You got pizza with outdated meat from Walmart.
I think that's maybe the most amazing scene in the whole thing, where they pull up the outdated meat truck from Walmart, and the employees go through it first and find out the stuff that they like the best, and then they throw the rest into a big dumpster, basically, to go take and feed the tigers. I mean, that scene is, like, you couldn't make that up. And then they decide to get into the pizza business, and they start serving pizza with expired meat from Walmart.
And don't forget that they're in the underwear business, too.
Oh, I forgot about the underwear.
You know, it was the ultimate Bill Murray scene, you know. I seldom wear underwear. If I do, it's usually something unusual, you know. And you know, chicks dig me. Well, and Joe made it clear he never wore underwear, but he would sell some tiger-looking underwear, you know, kind of marble sack style underwear. And then, one thing that I felt like I missed on the thing that I definitely wanted to see is I wanted to know all the stuff they were selling in that souvenir shop. And I'd freeze it. I'd try to check out, try to figure out, you know, beyond T-shirts and then underwear. He showed us that himself. And you know that his country music videos were for sale there. But I wanted to know what all that shop entailed, too.
All right, let's start with each of the Tiger people, right? I just want to talk about each of them individually here. Carole Baskin, Doc Antle, we've talked a little bit about him already, Joe Exotic. But let's start with Carole Baskin. This show in general, it's crazy, and it just keeps building on the layers of crazy. And when they said, I don't remember if it was the end of episode 2 or episode 3, where they're like, oh yeah, Carole Baskin, she killed her husband. Like, that was the accusation they made about him. That was an unbelievable bombshell to just get thrown into the show, right? Because it was already crazy enough.
And you wonder who fed Joe Exotic that information that he capitalized on, which you got to believe it was her husband's family.
Yeah. I mean, and so what do you think? So in general, if you, and you know, you've watched murder mysteries forever, you've seen the 48 hours, you know, all the murder investigations, everything else. If somebody is a multimillionaire and they disappear and no one knows where they went, and somebody else is inheriting millions of dollars, potentially tens of millions of dollars, it was unclear exactly what his assets were worth. It's almost like 99.9% chance that the person who is inheriting all the money in some way, like, it's, in other words, what I'm saying is it would be incredibly rare for someone who has threatened, according to a police report, to kill her husband already, for somebody who has been talking about getting a divorce, for that guy to truly just disappear and for her to have nothing at all to do with it and know nothing about it seems to strain the limits of credulity. Would you agree with that in general? Can't prove it, but it definitely seems highly improbable that that would be the case.
Well, one question I had is, how does he get his pilot's license and then lose it the same day?
That was weird.
And then she did lay out a scenario of flying over the Gulf and him getting shoved out of a plane, and how she would know that or even think of that. And then of course Joe Exotic thinks that she fed him to the tigers,
or put him under the sewer or whatever it was, like
put him under put him under the sewer. And then, you know, as Carol would talk and evade, and I don't want to get political with this at all, but as she would talk and evade, I couldn't help but think of one, maybe more, recent politician.
Hillary Clinton, I got blown up with that people said that Carol Baskin reminded them a ton of Hillary Clinton. But remember, the way she met this guy, first of all, she broke up his marriage. Okay, now he may not have been a great husband anyway. But the way they met, according to her story, was he was driving down the road late at night. She was walking along the side of the road. He pulled up beside her and tried to get her to get in the car three different times. And then finally said, "You can hold this gun and point it at me." And they just drove around and talked all night. And then they ended up sleeping together. And he left his wife for her. That has to be, yep. You've heard a lot of reasons and a lot of ways that people have met, you know, when couples get together and they're like, "Well, how did you guys meet?" I was walking on the side of the road. He picked me up, gave me a gun, told me I could shoot him. And instead we ended up getting married. Has to be one of the most unbelievable couple stories of all time.
Pickup line and aphrodisiac of all time. Okay. Here, we'll drive around and you can point a gun at me.
Yes.
Okay. How about that? I mean, now you don't see that every day.
And so they end up getting married and they're together for a long time. And she sort of slowly, and it seemed like, you know, they told her story a little bit. She obviously had a sort of a tortured background as a young girl, but it certainly seemed like, and again, it's not just him, the two daughters, the ex-wife, all of them basically said straight up, they believe that she killed him.
Yeah. And they think Carol's family, it was perhaps,
her dad, maybe as well.
Your dad and brother, perhaps a cottage industry. I don't know, but, you know, you start with follow the money and then of course there's no body. So then that, makes the evidence portion difficult, but, you don't leave that show feeling like she's innocent.
No.
And then, but yeah, it was, and how about this? Okay. All three of them loved getting married. Carol loved getting married. Joe Exotic loved getting married. And Doc loves getting married. Nobody loves getting married like the Big Cat Group.
That's a good point. And I think it goes to your sort of character analysis, which is these people just want so much attention. And the Tigers bring them that level of attention that maybe they can't find otherwise. Now, on Carol, in addition to the fact that she may have killed her husband, that he's vanished and nobody knows what happened to him, the guy that she ended up marrying seemed pretty weird, didn't he? Like, I mean, even like putting the like she had him on a chain, the walking him around, like he seemed like a pretty weird dude too, didn't he?
Yeah, very, all kinds of bondage images, run through your mind with Carol on top and possibly putting him in a cage, all kinds of
pretty wacky stuff.
Yeah. You can't help but think of wacky sexual proclivities with regard to this. Clearly, she wants to wants to be a dominator, and this guy's just seemed like kind of a
meek, subservient guy.
Yeah, whatever you say, you know, maybe a mask involved, which, oh, they did have masks. We already know masks are involved, but, yeah, all the stuff, you know.
All right, so anything else about Carol Baskin that stood out to you? And obviously the lawsuit, I mean, you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer. You know, it was clear that Joe Exotic was trying to antagonize them. And again, they had the resources either because of the money that they were bringing in through Big Cat Rescue or because of the money that she inherited from her husband to basically be able, you've seen this happen before, where when somebody has the legal chops to be able to go after somebody else, they just kind of open up double barrels. I mean, he said he spent, I think the subservient husband there said they spent over $1 million in legal fees. I mean, that's crazy when you consider what was at stake in their dispute.
Well, there's that, and the fact that it probably wasn't her money to begin with. But Carol, a constant agenda person, a predator, almost like those tigers, thinking one step ahead, and well down her list of saving tigers.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt at all about that.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We're talking to Mike Leach. I'm Clay Travis. This is a Wins and Losses podcast focused on the new hit Netflix series that everybody is watching during the quarantine. And that series is, of course, Tiger King. All right, so Carol Baskin ends up bankrupting basically Joe Exotic and setting everything off into a spiral. Then you got Doc Antle. We talked about him a little bit. You said you'd go visit the Tiger place. I said I would go. It appears that he's still open and in business. And he basically has a tiger cult that it appears that he's created, where all these young, attractive women come there and work, and he ends up marrying them. The one thing we didn't get from him is, did we get a sense for how many kids he has? They showed one or two kids.
Didn't get a sense of kids. He seemed to have a cleaner, well-organized place. The other thing that's amazing is how obsessed these, because this tiger business is a lifestyle. I mean, you're 24/7 in the tiger business, and the most amazing thing is how low the wages are. You've got to love living in a trailer or a shack and getting up and feeding and walking tigers every day in order to do this, because you know those tigers got to eat, it's a lifestyle that it looks like these people get consumed and obsessed with. And I think that clearly other people could too. I mean, if it, you know, attracts, it's kind of like pain pills. You know, I know people that haven't been able to kick pain pills. And then, you know, then there's others that are like me and my daughter, for example. And she's a doctor. We've never gotten through a bottle of pain pills. You know, you take a pain pill, you get something where you take a pain pill, and I can't sleep on them. You know, my eyes go half-mast, and I end up staying up all night watching TV. I feel like I'm two sentences behind, and just get tired of feeling like that, like I can't think quickly. And I've never finished a bottle. I've maybe made it to three of them. Before I just, go through whatever pain I have and take Tylenol. But I think this tiger business is like that some people can get addicted to them. And, a lot of times they're people that are looking for something and just want, like, certainly Joe Exotic's people were looking for something and just wanted somebody to love them and to be a part of something important or that they felt was important, and so we're willing to sacrifice everything else to do that. Some similar things with Doc. Now Doc's group seemed to be a happier group for what we saw. And then they, of course, he did not trust Carol Baskin at all. And then it seems like that his Joe might have been one of his proteges. And then the other thing that I was curious about, and they did not suggest any of this, none of them did, as far as getting attacked or wounded by a tiger, just some tiger twisting off.
Yeah, I expected that. We had the one person who. Yeah, right. I mean, they showed the one scene where Joe gets attacked and he blamed him for putting like perfume on his shoe or whatever it was. And then we obviously knew the employee there who was maybe the most realistic and normal of Joe's employees got her arm torn off. But in general, it seemed like they were surrounded by tigers quite a bit, and the stories of the tigers kind of going Siegfried and Roy on them or whatever didn't seem common. By the way, Doc also changed the names of all of the women. Remember, they changed their names to sound more exotic. And then the one girl that they got out of basically said, hey, this was a cult. She got out of it. She said that he also got her breast implants. Like, they were paying the girls $100 a week or whatever craziness she was saying they were getting paid. But then they also said, hey, if you get breast implants, you get extra days off to recover. I guess because he thought that added to the overall ambiance of his brand. And but that in and of itself was a crazy detail that I feel like among so many other crazy details, it didn't even get explored that much. It was just like something, hey, oh, here's another crazy thing, and then you skip off in another direction.
Well, there were so many details there. It sounds like it, because you could have done a 7-hour documentary on any one of these.
Oh, there's
and if they branch off and do them, I'll watch them too.
Yeah,
everything from murder investigation with Carol and where all those donations for Tiger Rescue are going while the doors are open. And she's doing the exact same thing Joe Exotic and Doc are with regard to the commercial interest in the Tiger business. And then the other amazing thing is, and the one guy touched on it, but, you know, can't they transplant some of these tigers to the wild if we have a shortage of them? I mean, can't we load them on a barge?
I totally wondered about that, too. Because they said in the opening, they said that there are
more 4,000 in the wild, 4,000 yes. in the wild, and something like 7,000 to 10,000 in the United States.
That's right. So there are more privately owned tigers in the United States than currently exist in the wild. That's one of the most unbelievable stats I've ever heard. All right, let's go to Joe Exotic. So we start off the program, obviously, with Joe Exotic and his zoo there, and so many different directions that this thing goes in. But Joe has a double marriage to two other men, neither one of whom is claiming that they're actually gay. So that's an unbelievable story to begin with.
Both insisting that they aren't gay.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying.
Insisting that they aren't gay, and then wanted to keep Joe happy and wanted meth.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's an unbelievable aspect to this story. One of them commits suicide. They have the funeral. And it was one of the most cringeworthy, awkward funerals I've ever seen. Where he's
do you think he deliberately committed suicide?
Well, we did. The only thing we saw was the video. You think maybe he was just trying to draw attention? It seems
no. Nah, well, because what I'm thinking, because it sounded like he would play with guns.
Yeah,
all day. Play with the ATVs all day. Play with guns all day, you know, just kind of have a free-for-all and play camp there at the Tiger, because it didn't sound like he did much work. But he loved flashing around guns and taking drugs. And I think it's possible that as you're playing, and he'd play pranks with loaded guns, like point them at people and everything else, which when I was a kid, you didn't even point a dart gun at somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, as he's all hopped up doing this, did he just forget that the thing was loaded and carried his shtick a little too far and accidentally shot himself through the head? I think
that's more likely than, I mean, it's hard to know because we saw, you know, however many minutes of his life that it was, but it didn't seem like there wasn't a suggestion that he had previously tried to commit suicide or anything like that. But I don't know that I've ever seen a eulogy or that any eulogy has ever existed in all time where part of the eulogy is about how the guy liked to put his balls on everybody's face. Did you see that?
That eulogy was a lot more about Joe Exotic than it was the departed.
Oh, there's no doubt. And then he finds a new boyfriend like two months later who's another younger guy. Like, I don't even understand how that was possible that he met on the internet. So Joe is there. And then my favorite character of all that was at Joe's place was his campaign manager. The campaign manager that he met at the Walmart in the ammunition aisle was, I think, one of the most unbelievable characters in this entire episode. Joshua Dial.
I would like to know more about him.
I thought he was incredible. He had some of the best lines in the whole place, and he thought he was really going to run a campaign that he met the guy who's running for office in the in the actual Walmart ammunition aisle, and I've got a great quote from him. But you had to be, as a guy who is probably got some libertarian leanings in general, like I do, you had to find that guy to be just a little bit entertaining in general, right?
He was outstanding, and also seemed like a fairly intelligent guy, although a little off base. And I wonder if he's running campaigns somewhere in the state of Oklahoma right now. But it would be interesting to know more about him. And it's almost like a Breaking Bad series that happens even more quickly, more suddenly, with even more bizarre twists and turns. And he sounded like a guy that just wanted to run campaigns. And the one thing about Joe Exotic is he did have the ability to put an umbrella over people and motivate them various directions for his self-interest, and had quite a menagerie of them.
He had the great line, the campaign manager did. I'm a libertarian. Like, he went through this whole lineup of things. I'm a libertarian, so fuck the government. That was the campaign manager. I mean, there were some incredible lines that he broke down there. But in a show full of crazy characters, he was definitely one of the most unbelievable of them. And then as if we weren't having enough that's going on there, all of the – and there are a lot, like you mentioned, guys who and girls who are looking for – a place. They said he hired a lot of these, a lot of former convicts, a lot of people with without a lot of other options. So ultimately, he ends up in a problem because he brings in this guy, Jeff. Now, I don't know how Jeff, in and of itself, I thought another of the most remarkable details was they decided they were going to have a Las Vegas bus service where you could go from one place to another and they would have baby tiger cubs that you could hold. And they got somebody to invest in it, and then it didn't work very well. It's one of the most unbelievable business ideas I've ever heard.
Yeah, it sounded like strippers and baby tigers. and then, of course, you know, and so that guy's a swinger, you know, and he's got his wife, who, and I don't know if she led the charge on that or he did. I have to suspect him. And then, you know, getting... Now, he's the one guy that didn't marry every love interest that he ran into, but wasn't going to be deprived nevertheless. And then, in the end, which without any real evidence, but a lot of people on the show think he's just a straight con man, and again, a convict. And then it'd be interesting to know where he is now.
Well, what's crazy is there are so many things that are insane in this show that putting baby tigers into luggage and rolling them through Las Vegas casinos, I was like, yeah, totally. I can totally see that happening. It didn't even, like, most of the time, if you found out that somebody you knew was doing that, that would be the craziest detail you've ever heard. It didn't even factor for him. I mean, at the end, the girl that he's with is having a baby, and he's talking about how he picked the best-looking nanny possible to be with them. So, but he shows up at this car park in a Ferrari. Now, it was a rented Ferrari, but I don't even you were in Oklahoma for a while. I mean, how is it possible that a Ferrari even ends up there? And then somehow he ends up in control of this wildlife park, and they're starting to build a new one, and he decides he's going to send Joe Exotic to jail. And, I mean, the whole thing is just crazy. I still don't understand how he escaped charges and how the other guy did as well. It sounded to me like they just decided they were going to set up Joe Exotic for doing something other than the, you know, murder for hire, but he'd been talking about that wildly for a long time. But the selling of the tiger cubs and everything else, it sounds like almost everybody does that.
Well, they all turned on him except for his most recent husband or wife,
yes,
or whatever he called. And then and one thing I've always loved about Oklahoma, like when I coached there and stuff, first of all, you can get a Ferrari somewhere in Oklahoma because there's a lot of money in Oklahoma. Now, it goes all extremes. There's a certain amount of poverty, but then there's over-the-top money.
Oil money, and then, right? There's a lot of oil people still in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and some of them land people too. But And the thing that was always fairly captivating about Oklahoma was you'd have the extreme contrast of the super rich and the super poor. And then in between, whether it was the less affluent trying to major up with the affluent without the means, you'd have kind of, you could have over the top clothing, say, or haircuts or hats or over the top. Folks in Oklahoma can really dress down because they're salt. The one thing about Oklahoma, the friendliest, greatest people, okay, just friendly, good people, good hearts and that type of thing. Some over the top something or maybe whether it's something they fasten to their truck that's unique or I don't know how to call it, but accessories and doodads exist in Oklahoma that are unique, I would say, to most other states, I'll tell you, if you want to see some interesting, captivating stuff, because they're like museums, a big truck stop in the state of Oklahoma. They'll have stuff that some cases it'll disgust you. Some cases you'll say, oh, I have to have it. But what are you going to do with it, But I have to have it. Well, and it'll just be so unique in such a way. When I was in Oklahoma, and I got there kind of just after some of this started, but it was still going on. The greatest thing on earth to listen to was R.D. Mercer tapes. There was a guy named R.D. Mercer, a radio figure, and I suspect the reason they don't do them now is because, the cat got out of the bag after a while. They got to knowing who the guy was. But this guy would, this radio host would pretend he's R.D. Mercer and do prank phone calls to various people and set them up and have lay out some scenario of facts and he'd always at some point say, well, how about if I come over there and whip your ass, and he'd lead into it, well, how big a boy are you? Well, I can be there in 10 minutes, that type of thing, anybody that has not heard R.D. Mercer tapes or recordings, you have to immediately go get them, check them out on the net. Really outstanding. And it just illustrates kind of some of the fun and humor of the state of Oklahoma.
When you were in Oklahoma, if you were still in Oklahoma, do you think this is the kind of place you could have found yourself at? You're out on the road recruiting or whatever, and you drive by. Wouldn't it be hard not to go to this random? I'll tell you, because I was down and we went to Mexico last year. We've been going to Mexico with the kids once football season is over, and they have a place down there called Croco Cancun, right? It's like a crocodile park outside of Cancun. And I posted a video from this thing. And I'm there with my kids. I got three boys, so they're excited to get to see all the animals and everything else. And there's no way they'd let you do this in America. But you walk through the Croco Cancun, and these are crocodiles, not alligators. And they just let you walk through this walkway, and there are crocodiles everywhere, right? In America, they would never let you do this, right? And you just got a guy.
Well, I say that now. If you go to the Okefenokee Swamp, which I have, because Valdosta State was right by the Okefenokee Swamp, you'll get really close to some just monster alligators.
You've done that? You've been out? Have you ever gone hunting for alligator or anything?
No, I always wanted to. Never did.
Yeah, I'd like to try it sometime, too. I think it would be terrifying, but I watched the Swamp People show, and I thought it would be pretty cool to go out and try to hunt for alligators.
And I know people that have. Then I'll tell you the other thing that's crossed my mind, and I don't have a story on it. Somehow I would be surprised. I'd be very surprised, all the people I know in Oklahoma, and hopefully they'll call me and tell me the story. I would be extremely surprised if I don't know somebody that doesn't know Joe Exotic.
Oh, yeah.
Or that hasn't met Joe Exotic. I'll bet somebody has. Heck, for all I know, he was an OU booster. I don't know.
Do you think that do you think he'll spend the rest of his – what did you think about the – we didn't get to see. The one thing I wish that we didn't get to see that I felt like was a real hindrance was there was no cameras in the courtroom. So we didn't get the opportunity to actually see all of the testimony and see any of the highlights of that. They just show the drawings and everything else. Do you – what did you think of the case that the – we and again, we just saw the sketches and the outline of it. But what did you think of the case that the government brought to bear against Joe Exotic? It seemed to me like there were a lot of loopholes. It seemed to me like there was a lot of reasonable doubt there.
It's almost impossible for me to say because, yeah. You know, again, there's no evidence. You know, we really don't know what the evidence was. They gave him 22 years. Don't really know what the evidence was of what he – probably won't serve 22 years. I don't know the exact evidence. It looked like a lot of people turned on him, and some of them, it sounded like, may have embellished their story a little bit. And then the one guy without the legs, they didn't talk to him, and even he had his legs decorated and accessorized up, and then his artificial limbs. And then so I was curious about the case and curious about the facts. I am against cameras in the courtroom. I thought I was in favor of it. You know, when I was initially in law school, I thought I was in favor of cameras in the courtroom. But I think what happens, and courts need to still be, you know, public. Like if you line up at the door and you go, you should be allowed to attend. But when they put them on TV, then there's a certain amount of witnesses and judges and attorneys that develop what I call Lance Ito syndrome, where, you know, for the OJ trial, where it became a lot more important to cater to the camera than the case. And a certain number of witnesses and people ended up in that trial, I believe, because they had the opportunity to be on TV without anything really of substance to say. And everybody's trying to respond and behave to the camera, which I don't think is healthy. Another trial back then that was a little like that was the William Kennedy Smith trial, I thought. Oh, the worst of all time. The worst of all time, the Anna Nicole Smith trial.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, the judge would start sobbing at the bench. I mean, all the stuff. And he personally wanted to question it. I mean, it's way out of hand.
So we don't know how long Joe Exotic is going to be in prison. And it's hard, like you said, even, you know, from a lawyer perspective or a legal perspective to figure out exactly what the evidence was. But if you remember, like, did you watch Making a Murderer back in the day, the other one that kind of caught fire on Netflix about the people up in Wisconsin?
Yes, I did.
So if you remember
and then
that.
I watched the Robert Durst one. The Robert Durst one's outstanding, too.
Yeah, yeah. And if you remember both of those, they basically reignited the legal process completely. And I feel like, to a large extent, that could happen here, too. I feel like with Carol Baskin, there's certainly a possibility that this re-energizes effort and energy in trying to figure out what happened to her husband. And I also feel like there are a lot of people who are going to have watched this and found, based on the way that this story was told, that Joe Exotic, they felt like, was kind of the fall guy. When you look at Jeff and the other kind of shady character whose name I forget, that Jeff's friend that he brought up that ended up testifying against him, it kind of felt like they were setting up Joe Exotic. And so it just felt – and then the other guy, like, I thought the funniest scene in the whole place, and I'm forgetting this guy's name, the sort of chunky guy with the funky haircut who was on the jet ski at the end, you know, like kind of talking about how –
Yeah, that's the guy that says you got to be careful of tiger people. They'll stab you right in the back. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy was, I mean, it was like Kenny Powers, you know, riding around on the jet ski there. It was almost too much when I watched that. It was in slow motion. I mean, it was an incredibly, I have no idea where he was riding a jet ski. I guess on a lake in Oklahoma, maybe. We didn't even really find that out. But I thought that entire process was just utterly, utterly absurdly hysterical.
Yeah, there's a few good lakes in Oklahoma. Tin Killer Lake, that's a lot of fun. I don't know what lake it was. Very Kenny Powers, sunglasses and all.
Yes.
I bet Joe Exotic would talk to us if we went and met him in prison. I'll bet you he'd be happy to talk to us.
Oh, I 100% would take that trip.
And then, you got like Carol Baskin with the whole deal on her husband lingering out there. But even if that may get reignited, and even if she thinks it might get reignited, well, one, I think she's arrogant enough that she thinks that she's untouchable. But then the other thing, I think the attention surrounding this thing would be irresistible to her, and no matter what happened, she wouldn't be able to, resist flying into the flame with regard to the attention that's generated by this thing.
Oh, I don't have any doubt.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I'm Clay Travis. This is Wins and Losses. Mike Leach with us, Mississippi State football coach. We're talking about the new sweeping sensation viral documentary that is on Netflix. Joe Exotic is the star. Tiger King is the show. All right, so a couple of last thoughts here, and there may be other things you wanted to talk about as well, but I jotted down notes as I was watching it. What do you think about you mentioned Rick, the sort of the documentary guy, and how he was kind of the voice of normalcy in many ways. Rick Kirkham was his name. He had a great voice, and he was the guy who used to be a reporter. What do you think happened with the burning down of the studio and everything that was inside?
You wonder if it was some insurance thing was the first thing that came to my mind. And then they said...
We know it was arson. We just don't know who did it.
Well, I think we have a pretty good idea who did it. I mean, who controlled everything around there? I mean, I can't prove it, but
I think it was probably Joe Exotic. But yes, even in the video, it looked a little bit like him. And then I guess my final thought is, what about?
And then there was some dialogue. I can't remember what he said. It's something to the effect of, "Well, it was mine anyway," or something like that, or anyway, where. Both with regard to Carol's potentially murdering her husband, there were some foreshadowing type of comments, and then same way with burning down that studio. One thing with that reporter, it seems to me that guy, being a reporter. And then having been there and having filmed it and having lived it to a point would probably have some interesting insights, maybe not correct on all of them, but if he were to, give what his thoughts were on it, maybe not 100% true, but his thoughts, I think, would be kind of interesting.
No, I think that would be fascinating. And my final thought, I guess, is the guy who filmed this documentary, I don't have any idea.
Yeah, we never saw him.
We just saw him a couple of times. I kind of want to know his story because we know he started off kind of doing a story on exotic animals. Because if you remember early on, there was a white leopard or something like that in the back of a guy's van. And they had some snakes and everything else. And then somehow that led him to Joe Exotic, which led him into the story of trying to explore these big cat people and why they were such interesting and intriguing characters in their own right. But how did that story kind of come about for him? How many hours did he spend? How many hours was he there? I mean, this had to be something that he's spending a decade on or something.
Didn't he say 5 years? I thought he said 5 years.
Yeah, he might have said 5 years. But, I mean, the amount of footage that he didn't put into this documentary had to be unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine sifting through all that? And, it's a It's something wild every day.
And these guys are all such consummate liars in many ways, right? It's hard to figure out what's true and what's false. All of the detail work, you know, when you hear, oh, this woman killed her husband, and, you know, all the background of Joe Exotic and the guy who's got the harem down in South Carolina, Doc. I mean, these people are so incredibly wild and crazy that it's hard to be able to distinguish truth from lie, and that's ultimately the goal of a documentary filmmaker. I would think that's almost impossible for him.
Yeah, and then there were some rare cases on it that they're so insulated within their life, you know, that they've manufactured for themselves, that there were some things that, although I don't believe were true, I think occasionally that they thought they were true or had themselves convinced it was true.
Yeah, I don't think there are any doubts at all. Do you want to do a lightning round? I could go on social media right now and be like, do you have questions for us about Tiger King? And we could go through lightning round, or if you got time, we're also good. I think we've all talked about it too. It's your call.
We can do lightning round.
All right, let's do lightning round. I'm getting on Twitter right now, and I'm going to say, we are currently taping the Tiger King podcast special. What questions do you have for Coach Leach and I? Fire away. Want to make sure we don't miss anything. Drew wants to know, Coach, when are you and Gardner Minshew going to open your own zoo in Florida?
I'll tell you, that'd be a fun zoo. And that'd be a fun zoo. It'd be more like, if I were to do something like that, it'd be like a really cool natural habitat that already has a certain amount, you know, where they can run wild out there, you know, so you fence out your house so something doesn't come get you, but, you know, you can go kind of safari it out there and check out what's out there, you know, and maybe go camp out there a little bit.
If you could have any exotic animal, if you could own any exotic animal yourself, you could have it down in Starkville, which exotic animal do you think you would want?
Well, the most exotic I've had is a raccoon, and that would fit in good in Starkville, I think.
Yeah. But that's not really that difficult to take care of, right? A raccoon is like, in the grand scheme of things, I would imagine you would know better than me, but it's not that tough, right?
Now you just let them run around with the cats and dogs, and if you want to bring them in the house, you go ahead, and they'll pull all the pots and pans out of the cupboards because they love shiny stuff, and they'll go almost entranced, insane with all the shiny pots and pans, and they'll clank them all over. And they can get to the top shelf, too. Make no mistake about that. And then as a kid, I always wanted a chimpanzee. Yeah. Now, I wouldn't want to have the responsibility of taking care of a chimpanzee, but it would be very fun to know that you have a chimpanzee for a pet, you know, and, you know, your little sidekick, alter ego type of guy.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
All right, we got a bunch of questions rolling in. You can follow, by the way, Mike Leach. Tell him you enjoyed our conversation here at Coach_Leach. I'm at Clay Travis. And during the live taping of the podcast here, I went on Twitter and asked people. So these are several good questions. Austin wants to know, Coach, which of your former players reminds you the most of Joe Exotic? Have you ever had... What player has been the most eccentric or the most interesting or the craziest that you've ever coached? Is there one that comes to mind?
I've had a lot of them. I mean, I've had a lot of them, and everybody is interesting, exotic, charismatic in their own way. I mean, you've already mentioned Gardner, and Gardner's awfully tough to argue with. I think Logan Tago is a good one. And also Logan Tago and Frankie Louvu, just kind of overpowering kind of personalities, you know, just their general energy for life and things. I've had so many. It's hard to, you know, and you think kind of one year at a time, and then you think back and go further back, and you know, there's some there's some even wilder ones. You know, just guys that are kind of creative that always have something going on. I'll tell you a really fun guy that's a great storyteller, hilarious, coaches football somewhere there in Texas, is a guy named Bob Draper at Iowa Wesleyan College. He was a unique and fun guy to hang out with, and you know, had a pickup. He'd roll into this pickup, great big guy, had a very distinct laugh and was always laughing. Had a refrigerator right next to his bed, you know, and has done a good job as a coach down there. And then, I mean, I can think of, it's almost like if you give me a year, I can, or a season, I can rattle off, you know, one or two guys. But that's the thing about football that's captivating, is it's not so much the X's and O's. Those are exciting. Practice is exciting. Big wins are exciting. But the contrast and the variety of personalities that you get in there that start to reveal themselves, and, you know, the discussions you have, I mean, and just kind of the habits are, I mean, they stick with you for a long time, and you get the opportunity to sample it a lot.
A question here. What do you think of Joe Exotic's singing voice, Seth asks? Highly doctored in studio, or does he really have, dare I say, a decent voice? I mean, his voice seemed pretty decent, didn't it?
Well, everything's the same tune.
Yeah.
It would be different words, same tune. I did wonder if he was actually playing the guitar, and I didn't arrive at a conclusion on that, but it didn't look like... He didn't play a lot of chords, but it didn't look like his hand at the top of the neck of the guitar was moving much. And then, you know, he had a soothing voice of sorts, kind of a little bit redundant. A lot of them the same tune. I guess I would have liked to have seen a little more contrast to the style of songs or... you know, what he sang. It seemed to me that all the same song, different words a lot of times.
Jimmy wants to know, what's the best out-of-date meat to eat out of the Walmart meat barrel if you had to pick?
I would have to think maybe something highly processed like a which I hate salami, but, you know, something that's already pretty dry and hard, although they talk about aging beef. If you knew what you were doing there and didn't poison yourself, you might be all right. I wouldn't mess with fish if I could help it. I don't know, but you sure saw a lot of sausage on those pizzas, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think there's. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I like that the guys had their favorite picks about what exactly they would choose if they had to pick. All right, I'm reading a couple more of these. If you had to pick, what Dr. Chris says. If you have to pick one person to vacation with for a month, who do you pick? Joe Exotic, Carol Baskin and her husband, Jeff Lowe, or Doc Antle?
This is kind of like F, Mary, Kill, isn't it?
yeah, it is.
Okay,
I don't think there are great options here. Let's start with that.
I think it would be Doc. I think because I think Doc would be a pretty good storyteller. I think he has a lot of adventures in his own right that he could tell you about. And it does seem that Doc would spill the beans on everybody else.
What about Halloween? These are going to be big Halloween costumes come October. Which of the characters do you think makes the best Halloween costume?
Well, for Carol, already had them had her a couple's costume, her and her husband.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt.
But that's you know, they're playing a little bit different game. It looked to me like than I'd be willing to get into. Let's see, Joe Exotic. You have to get a mullet if you go Joe Exotic. Boy, there were some Halloween costumes though. Well, okay, maybe the guy on the jet ski.
Jet ski, that'd be a great costume. That hair.
Yeah, if you could pull it off, you got to get the hair right. You got to get the right mask, you know?
Yeah. No, that would be outstanding. Ricky asks, has Coach Leach ordered any of the Joe Exotic undergarments for your next post, for the next painting that you're going to pose for?
I have not. I have not. They're certainly on the list. I mean, who wouldn't want? The trouble with it is you don't feel, it doesn't feel very authentic because Joe says he doesn't wear underwear.
Yeah, right. But that would be great for your photo. I mean, your painting. If you went with the Joe Exotic underwear for Mississippi State.
Well, at the rate they're just sticking my head on top of other people's photos, I don't think I'm going to have to worry about that very much. I imagine that'll probably already be taken care of.
These are fantastic, by the way. All the questions that are rolling in. Would you? So a lot of people are asking Tiger-related questions. Would you go into one of those Tiger cages? Like, let's say, and I'm not talking about with like the tiny, you know, like the you know, cubs. I'm talking about like the big full-grown tigers. Would you be willing to walk into one of those cages, not by yourself, but with any of the employees, or would you say there's no way?
I'd let the employees go in first, take a lap. I would carefully evaluate whether the employee was slower than I was. And then, I would. I had there was a thing I tweeted out on a pasture. The sign on the fence says, don't enter this pasture unless you can make it all the way across in 9 seconds, because the bull can do it in 10.
Would you ever run with the bulls in Pamplona, by the way?
I've always wanted to.
Would you do it if you were over in Spain? Like, you think you're, or would you, I mean, would that be something you'd be willing to try?
Yes, I would definitely do it. I would definitely do it. A number of people have. My odds of survival are quite high. I would not be, back there waving stuff at them, you know, the first layer. And those that I've talked to that have done it, say if you feel threatened, there's kind of an edge to the thing, and you kind of just go to the side and get up there. I've also heard that it's, and I don't know the exact logistics of it, it's a little bit slower process than you think. And with that said, they say the people out there doing it are hammered and have been up all night.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Have you ever done it? I would do it.
No, I don't know. I don't know if I would do it now. Your kids are grown, right? So when I think about taking risk now, I think, you know, my kids are so young. I don't want to do something incredibly stupid when I got a 5-year-old. But I wouldn't be as – I'm not afraid of doing it when they're, you know, like graduated from high school. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like when you have young kids, your risk tolerance goes down because you're like, hey, I want to make sure that I get them to adulthood. And then once you get them to adulthood, you're like, okay, I can do – you know, I'm pretty good shape now.
Well, growing up, I grew up around livestock too, you know.
Yeah, so you're familiar with it in Wyoming.
Yeah, and so, I mean – it wasn't really running with the bulls, but there's times where you end up a little closer to livestock than you'd like, or all of a sudden they start heading one side of the corral and it gets a little crowded. But, you know, yeah, I would do it.
All right, these are fantastic. I think we knocked almost all of them out. People want to know if you went to the Wynnewood Exotic Animal Park, but we already know that you didn't. I think we talked about that already. And let me just scroll through the map.
I didn't know it was there. Oh, the other curious, interesting thing one is that other animal park they're building. It sounded like they just pulled up stakes and stopped, and who knows where all those animals went. I don't know.
Yeah, that's one thing that I had a question about at the end was what happened to all the animals as they made the decision. What do you think that somebody said? What do you think the odds are of the relationship between Jeff and his wife who was having a baby? What do you think the odds are they stay married forever?
Initially, I didn't. I would have said no, but you know, I think that you know they were always kind of together. I don't know the backstory or whatever, but to be honest, they did kind of strike me as being into one another. I mean, those Joe's. Sometimes you'd call them wives, sometimes you'd call them husbands. They seemed a little more at a convenience, just general lifestyle. His wife actually struck me as kind of into him. I think she was kind of buying all the bravado he was selling, you know?
Yeah, I don't think there's I don't think there's any doubt at all. Coach, this has been fantastic. Where are you, by the way? What part of the country are you in right now?
Well, I'm in Key West. What happened with us was we were in the middle of spring break, anxiously getting ready to start spring ball at the end of spring break. And then they said, all right, everybody stay where you're at and extend spring break another week because they didn't want anybody on campus. And now it's currently extended to April 15th. So, we've got as many as we can tucked away doing online academics and, you know, just kind of waiting for the go-ahead, really. We've got a few on campus. You know, one's in the dorm. If they filled out special paperwork and didn't have anywhere else to go, they could stay in the dorm. We have about 12 in Starkville, and about 6 of them are from Starkville, and the others just stayed at their apartment because I guess it was better than their home condition. And so things seem to be going smoothly, I mean, relatively speaking. I mean, nobody's really happy about it, but everybody, hopefully everybody, is finding productive ways to use their time and continuing to grow as people, you know.
No doubt. And the best way you can grow as a person, sitting around watching 7 hours of The Tiger King. Coach, this has been fantastic. We need to do it again sometime soon in the future when you we both watch a show and we both are interested in it. I think people are going to absolutely love this. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. I'm Clay Travis. He's Mike Leach, Mississippi State football coach. Go find him on Twitter at @coach_Leach. Let him know how much you enjoyed the podcast here. Thanks for all the great questions, and thanks for hanging out with us. This has been Wins and Losses, Tiger King edition. Thanks for hanging.